Welcome to The Revenue Architects. I'm your host, Jeff Ignacio. In this podcast, we're going to bring incredible business athletes together. We'll explore how to build a go-to-market capability for businesses, no matter the size or shape. We'll remix content from a bunch of different places, bring in guests, deep dive into incredible topics. So with that in mind, I want to thank you for joining us. And now on to this episode of The Revenue Architects. Today, we have Joe Caprio on the podcast. Joe is a co-founder of Reprise, a no-code platform that translates your software demo without bringing in engineering resources to the pre-sales and demo motion. I've seen the platform myself and I'm impressed with the direction it is heading. And though he's not paying me for this podcast, but just giving him props. And prior to Reprise, Joe was a sales VP at Chorus.ai and led the sales team at Insight Squared, two companies that have certainly made a name for themselves in the revenue tech landscape. I have profound respect for sales pros turned founders. Joe, you're a glutton for punishment, so welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Jeff. I'm really happy to be here, and I'm grateful that you'd have me. So thank you.
So, you know, we talk about the pre-sales motion, you and I privately, quite a bit. You know, every startup requires risk and recognition. And so you recognize there's a gap in the market around the demo space or the pre-sales space. And there's a risk because now you're taking on more than just a sales role. You're actually running a company. I'd love to hear about your journey and how to tell the audience about yourself and what you're launching here at Reprise.
Sure. So this is a classic, we had this problem story. You know, it's the original, two of the three original co-founders from Insight Squared, where I was the head of sales. And at Insight Squared, you know, we had a problem. We didn't know what to show on calls. We were showing production environments or real instances of Insight Squared and, you know, exposing our data to prospects or exposing customer data. And I'm going back years and years and years. And, I, as the head of sales, I went to the CTO and I said, I need a demo environment. And he spent two months building a demo environment, not building a roadmap. You know what I mean? And then he came back and I said, this is great. Now we need one for the enterprise market. And so my CTO spent another month building a demo environment. Now that's 3 months not building a roadmap. And when he was done, you know, our head of marketing was like, these demos are great. They have, you know, tailored, verticalized data. It's amazing. I want one for the website. And so my CTO spent 2 months building that one. So now you're a quarter and a half with your engineering team building demo assets instead of building new features and building out the roadmap. So we kind of had a moment where we said, this is crazy. They don't write my blog. They don't host my webinar. Why are they building demo assets just because it looks like the product? So the band broke up. We all went our separate ways. And Brian Stevenson, our CEO, he lands at Catalent as their CISO. And they say, welcome aboard. Your first job is rebuilding our sales demo. And he realized at that point, this is pervasive. Every SaaS company out there, they spend millions of dollars building their product. And then they use that product as a sales and marketing asset. But it wasn't designed to be a demo. It was designed to work. And so what we do is we clone our customers' production environments, and we make really simple no-code editable demos out of them so a sales and a marketing leader can create as many different verticalized persona-based demos as they want so they resonate in every customer interaction instead of having that one demo to rule them all where it's a very vanilla sandbox that doesn't really make any sense to anyone.
So let's play that out a little bit. You have a new sales rep who just came into, let's say, the BI space at Insight Squared, but previously sold a different type of software in a different type of space. They have to overcome basically ramping into a new space. They don't know the BI data warehousing space at all. And then you're asking them to go build their own environment or potentially have a centralized team. In this case, it's interesting. You have the CTO who has product roadmaps for external deliverables on their plate, building internal demos that the sales team can do their job. Are you getting feedback from sales enablement and heads of sales on how this is accelerating that time to hit the sales floor for both the sales rep and the sales engineers?
Yes. Yes, I am. We are shrinking, you know, time to productivity or ramp time for new hires. The way that I would explain this is I think about the benefit. I've bought Outreach at 3 companies now. And a lot of people think the benefit of using a product like Outreach is that you can ship more emails. And yeah, that's great. You know, you send more emails, you get more opens, you create more pipeline. But my sneaky favorite part about Outreach is that I would hire, you know, somebody right out of college, first job, and I'd put them in a seat as a BDR. And they're not worldly. They don't really have that much experience. They really can't communicate with a CFO or a target buyer. And so their emails don't really make sense. They might fall flat. There's a ramp time for how you can figure out how to talk to your target market. Well, with Outreach, I was just taking the best performing emails from the veteran BDRs and using those templates to get my rookie BDRs to message the way that gets a response. And then I took the sales job, the head of sales job at Chorus, and it's the same thing. I would record my veteran sellers, and then I would create playlists that I would play for my rookies. And so when I would onboard rookie salespeople, I'd have them watch veteran salespeople and figure out the talk track that was most effective. And so it really is about assimilating into best practices as established by your top performers. Well, how do you do that with demos, right? Go sit with Amber. She's been here the longest. She's the best. And you kind of try to like follow Amber around and join her calls and see what she's demoing, but you don't have context because you haven't been involved in the entire engagement so far. And so is it a good call or a bad call? What vertical is it? And you really can't learn by just being dropped in a random demo and watching someone do a demo. So what our customers are doing with our product is they're creating a warehouse of demos. This is the click track to use for buyer persona 1. This is the click track to use for buyer persona 2. This is what you do if they have this tech stack or that tech stack, and we want to show them how we integrate with their existing tech. And so what you end up having is a warehouse of launchable, clickable, short demos that get right to the point. And you don't let your reps demo in a production environment where they could get lost or distracted. You put them on the rails. Every demo is 5 clicks, 10 minutes long. And you get them to practice these persona and vertical-based demos to the point where they get on the phone with a customer, and all they have to do is say, what role is this person? What vertical are they in? Great, I'm in demo 7. And I launch that demo, and I follow the prompts, and I get right to the point, and it resonates because it's been set up ahead of time by veteran members of the company who know what resonates, instead of letting your new salespeople fumble around until they figure out the talk track that works, right? Let people kind of follow the folks that were there before them and use what is known to work.
So it's almost as in a decision tree or a battleship grid where I'm like, I'm on B7. Great. B7. Let's see what's there. Let me pull up the content that's relevant. And hopefully that will shore in what you call time to productivity. Now, productivity is one thing, but relevance is another, right? Let's talk about the old way of doing models or demos. How do sales solution consultants or sales engineers, whatever you call them, the folks who basically know all the clicks and the traps of the product, how do they learn the product and how do they bake that into the sales process today as right along with their sales reps? And how do you think that's going to change in the next coming years?
Interesting. You know, for me, I think that there is a bit of a movement coming when it comes to the demo itself. I think that there is no, I should say I'm finding. I've done about 600 product market fit interviews as I take this product to market. So I joined in April of last year. And over the last 9 months, I've gone out and done about 600 conversations, mostly with my first degree network. And then I did go outbound to some like, you know, who I think would be my ICP. And I'm testing my messaging, you know, with strangers too. And what I'm finding is there's no owner of your company's demo. And there's an owner of the forecast. It's usually you, Jeff. There's an owner of the website, it's demand gen or growth, right? There's an owner for most of the things or the processes that you own as a company. There's an owner. You're responsible for the forecast. You test the accuracy, and if it's not accurate, you improve it and you make tweaks to the forecast until you have a good one. But it's your responsibility in RevOps, right? Or in some companies, it's a CRO's responsibility to forecast. But there's an owner. With demos, it's interesting. Sales wants to own the talk track. Sales engineering owns the instance. Product marketing owns messaging. Right? Product owns the vision. You know, sales enablement owns training. You go up and down the org chart and you realize everyone plays a role in the demo. But like most things, when everyone has a role to play, no one person owns it. And so as a result of this, what you have is 1,000 demos. You get 100 reps, you get 100 different versions of the demo. If I got 10 of your salespeople on a call one at a time and I said, show me your demo, I get 10 different demos, right? And so there really is a movement that's about to take place. I'm telling you, it's there's going to be a demo owner. There's going to be a demo cadence at which you update the demo. And there's going to be a committee where people have a stated responsibility. What are the segments we sell into? What is the collateral we show per segment? What are the screens we're supposed to deliver? What is the talk track? How do we test it to make sure it's resonating? And what's the iteration cycle that we get into? So the one thing that I'm finding that's different now or changing is we're going to start treating our demo like an asset instead of an activity. Assets have owners, activities get done. Demos get done today. Demos are about to be an asset that gets taken care of.
Now, that reminds me of something called the responsibility or the ownership paradox. We all own it, therefore no one is accountable for it. Right? We all win together, lose together, but no one's in the driver's seat. We're all in the back seat.
Jeff, that's wild. So I tell my sellers, you have a group meeting, you know, five or six prospects on the other end. And when it's over, it's polite, you send a message out to the group. Hey, everyone, thanks for your time. This is what we covered. Here's what happens next. And you know what happens? All six people look to the left and look to the right, and they hope someone else is responsible. And so what you really need to do, you send a message to all six, and you reply, you know, to who you think the champion is and send a one-off. You reply to who you think the economic buyer is. You send a one-off. You send a reply to who you think the mobilizer is. And you start these one-to-one relationships, because what will happen in a one-to-one email is they'll actually reply and say, hey, man, you want to talk to Jeff? But if you send it to a group, they won't reply and tell you that. They'll just assume that Jeff's gonna handle it. So you're exactly right. When it's shared responsibility, nobody's responsible.
Same thing for internal project management. Something that we look at is either the RACI or the DACI framework. You have a driver. That person has the whip and cracking the project management. You have your approver. You know, who is the economic buyer, the champion, you know, the person who... the authority, whatever cycle, whatever qualification framework you're using. Then there's your contributors, the folks whose opinions actually help shape the decision, the drivers and approvers' minds. Then you have these informed, right? The peanut gallery, the folks who, you know, courtesy, you let them know that something's happening. And so, my second question here is, you know, I've been in RevOps for a few years and you talked about me owning the forecast, guilty. And I've been able to help support both an enterprise and an inside sales motion, both very different. In order to do so, you have to be innately curious to try to figure out how to solve those problems for both of those sales cycles. But if you ask many sales teams, you'll find, you know, did you get the demo as a cornerstone around when an opportunity begins, the holy grail of the qualification. This is the birth, the big bang of a deal. You showed your product. And, you know, I find that somehow we skip discovery, right? And discovery is one of the, I feel, still one of the most, if not the most important part of a sales motion. And deals are lost not at the end, but at the beginning. So I'd love to hear from you. You know, what do you think about that? What's missing from that point of view?
There's a lot of conversation right now about discovery in sales. And I think that it's because the loudest voices in this conversation are the thought leaders. And the thought leaders are often asking you for something. You know, they're asking you to hire them to train your sales team. That's what they're asking you for. And so what do you train? You know, you could train discovery. And so everybody wants to pontificate on how best to do discovery. And what's really happening out there is the buyer motion has shifted, whether you like it or not, and whether it makes winning a deal easier or not, it shifted. My wife and I sold two houses during COVID, and we bought two houses. It was all the money we have. And we did it without talking to somebody, without meeting somebody. We did the in-chat, in-the-app chat to get our mortgage. And we texted listings that we found on Redfin to a realtor who then texted back the lockbox code so we could tour the house. We never met her, right? So we bought and sold two houses, technically four, during COVID. All the money we had, we moved it from over here to over there. And then I got here at Reprise, and I had to buy a product. It was $5,000. And I tried to get the seller to send me the info I need, and he requires a call. So I get on the phone call. Here's a guy a couple years out of college, and he says to me, "You wouldn't understand my demo. It's very technical. You wouldn't understand my product until you gave me discovery." And I laughed in his face, Jeff. And I said, "You are out of your mind if you're going to tell me I can't process what this technology does. I came inbound because I have the need. I know what you do because I know my problem." You know what he said back? "Well, it's our process here the first call is for discovery and the second call is for a demo. And so that is a byproduct of legacy sales thought leadership. They're flying the Sandler submarine, which was designed in the 1950s, but the world has changed. I buy stuff on my iPhone and I use it and then I decide if I want to keep it. My mom put Uber on her phone and said, are there cars nearby? And there was, so now she uses Uber, right? My aunt checked out Airbnb, scrolled the listings, and they decided she likes hotels tonight instead. Okay, so we're used to, as a buyer, this instant gratification, and we want it even from enterprise B2B SaaS companies. We want to know right away what you do. And so if you show up to a first call, right, and I'm expecting you to tell me what you do right away, and you say you'd rather do a 60-minute discovery call and then do a demo, you just burned me. You lost all the faith. I have no trust in you. And you want to know how I know I'm right? It takes 5 to 6 buyers to make a SaaS purchase. Everything's buyer by committee. We know this. I could quote 100 studies. 5 to 6 people have to get involved before you can sell a piece of software. Okay. Average first call is between 1 and 2 prospects. It's usually one person you meet on a first call. Maybe they bring a second person. So you do discovery on call 1 and demo on call 2. How could this make any sense? You don't do discovery on call 3 when you meet the third stakeholder. You don't do a demo on call 5 when you meet the fifth stakeholder. No, it is not discovery, demo, trial, deal like it used to be. It is a series of discovery and demos, a series of calls where you show a little bit of product and then you earned discovery. And then the next time you do demo on what they told you and then you get more discovery. And then the next time you bring the new stakeholder up to speed, which is a demo, and then you get discovery. And it is a long tail series of disco demo calls instead of discovery and then demo. And the biggest mistake that sellers are going to make right now is listening to those people that are trying to sell you consulting services. That's the mistake sellers are going to make. You listen to people that are screaming, it's discovery and then demo. That is garbage. It's a teaser demo on the first meeting, and it's a recap demo on the second meeting, and it's a, you know, like a business case proving demo on the third meeting. It's a technical deep dive demo on the fourth meeting, but it is a demo on every meeting, and it's discovery on every meeting. So your question, how do you do discovery now? Stagger discovery throughout the sales motion across multiple stakeholders, not reserving one 40-minute grill session for discovery. Discovery never stops.
I feel like we can unpack that for days, by the way. By the way, you mentioned flying a submarine. I'd be very keen to see a flying submarine. but let's do this in order. Airbnb killed the travel agent. Uber killed the cab operator. Software sales, not dead yet, but it sounds like it's on its way because buyers have now a paradigm shift where they kind of know what they want. In fact, you're saying you know what they want. They're showing it to you not at the first mile. They're showing to you midway through the marathon already. And yet you want to drag them back to the starting line. They've already been running for about 1.5 miles. So speaking as Jeff, someone that's run a couple of marathons, I like my legs warm. I don't want to go back to the finish line and freeze.
Jeff, you're 100% right. How about this? I go on anyone's website, anyone listening right now, prove me wrong. Send me a screenshot of your website and I'll apologize if I'm wrong. I can go on your website and I can click 1 or 2 buttons and you will have segmented me by vertical and by persona. And I will have vertical persona specific marketing language talking to me on everyone's website. You split by product, by platform, whatever. You segment your audience on your website and then you give me specific pitch language, okay? Then I get on a phone call with a human being, and that living, breathing, thinking human being can't ask me 1 or 2 questions and then give me a tailored pitch. Illogical, crazy, non-believable. All you're doing is lying to your customer, forcing what you think will lead to a higher win rate, forcing a process that you think will help you sell, and you're lying to people if you tell them it's for any reason other than your sales trainer told you it'd increase your win rate.
Let's play that out again. So MarTech, front of the funnel, we're able to segment you. We bring in your customer behavior through either anonymous enrichment, and then we bring in a third-party contact database that looks at your account, your industry, your title, and then we put some sort of logic that tells me your seniority level. We look at other folks who may have hit my database from your account and correlated that, hey, these guys are hot and bothered. They want to talk to us. And then my sales reps show up with a tailored script because I can't keep up with factorial tailored scripts, and I give you the founder story. Mm-hmm. When it doesn't matter, when I could have given you a case study written by my product manager and marketing team, and we just had it sitting as shelfware in Google Drive. So I feel frustrated for myself, by the way. I've been guilty of designing systems that have not kept up with where you want to go. So you're doing calculus and I'm still doing arithmetic.
Jeff, I'm not ready to tell you the truth yet. That's the thing, right? I'm not ready to tell you the truth on a first call. That's why discovery sucks, because you do it on a first call before you've earned it. You know, the discovery ends up sounding like, how do you guys normally buy software? And it's offensive, right? It's rude because it's like, I don't know yet that you even could solve my problem. I don't know yet that you even know my problem, but you're asking me who else needs to be involved. You might as well say, who's your boss, right? The discovery up front is awkward because they're not ready for it yet. It's like approaching somebody at a bar. I'm going to show my age. We used to actually have to meet people at bars. You know what I mean? And so if I wanted a date, I'd have to go to a bar, you know, it like meet somebody. And it's like walking up to a stranger at a bar and trying to get all the way to like, would you marry me? You know what I mean? Before you've even gone out for a drink yet. You know, like the discovery before the delivery, it doesn't make sense anymore. It's not how humans want to behave. It's not how they want to talk to each other. It's not how we want to do anything. Yet you're making your sales reps go in there and interrogate people when they're not ready to open up to you yet. So ask what they want. Ask why they're here. Right? Get context on what they want from the call and then deliver. They want education, so deliver. And then on the next meeting, right, do a little bit more and then deliver. And then on the next meeting, get a little bit more and then deliver. But stop trying to do a 60-minute discovery call when the other person is sitting there like, geez, maybe I should have just watched their videos on YouTube and ignored this kid.
Imagine that, a recorded demo online that could be accessed. Now, you know, you're back in founding, but I want to pull you back into Reprise, right? And I had Pete Kazanji on another episode, and you know, he always talks about founder selling. It was one of his books that, you know, I started reading a couple of years ago. And so, you know, tell me about you in that founder selling mode. I mean, you know your space and your gaps, your customers' gaps extremely well. What surprises you today in that?
In what I'm hearing from customers?
I think just when you're in founder selling mode, right? You're not just a founder, you're selling. And you know, what is it about going out there as, you're not the first sales hire, you're not the 10th sales hire, you're the founder. And so mm-hmm. you're out there knocking on doors. Mm. What is that like going into that mode? And is it different from, you know, your previous time leading inside sales?
Yeah. So I've got kind of an interesting background. I spent like 6 years at Insight Squared. And so Insight Squared sold a forecasting tool, a pipeline management tool. It's basically like the metrics that a startup needs to track and hit in order to, you know, safely maintain their growth trajectory. So 80% of the customers, this is years ago when I was there, it's been 3 years, but 80% of the customers were venture backed. You know, and which J curve they were on, you know, was different. We had some A companies, some C companies, we had some publicly traded customers, but most of our customers were on a growth trajectory, and we were selling them the reporting software to make sure they hit those milestones. So I spent 6 years essentially consulting and delivering, these are the metrics you should track to make sure your business is on track. So I know growth metrics front and back. Then I went to Chorus, and I spent 2 years selling sales training. You know, you buy call recording to build out playlists to teach your new hires how to sell. So I spent 2 years consulting and selling sales readiness programs to sales enablement leaders. So at Reprise, you know, it's an interesting thing for me, founder-led sales, because I also consult for a couple of early companies and I consult on founder-led selling and I teach founders how to go to sales, how to go to market. Most founders are CEO, CTO. They're not sales leaders turned founders. They're tech people turned founders. And so they don't really know how to sell. And so I did my, you know, my sales MBA, so to speak, in a company that teaches you the metrics you need to hit to keep your company on track and the onboarding you need to do to get your new hires ramped up. And then I consult with other companies on how to take a product to market. So for me, at Reprise, I kind of came in here knowing what the number one problem is when founders go to market. The number one problem, when you are the founder in charge of selling, you are also the founder in charge of 1,000 other things. And that's whether you're a one person shop or you have a tiny, you know, four co-founders, right? But I still have a million responsibilities. And the number one problem is you get distracted and you do not book enough meetings. I'm sorry to be so blunt about it, but you don't have enough meetings. I ask the people I consult with, how many sales meetings do you have in a typical day? And their eyes go wide, like, well, I don't even know if I have one every day. I'm like, you need four meetings a day. You need to have four prospect or customer product market fit interview style conversations per day, because those meetings both fuel your pipeline, but they also fuel your product innovation and your messaging innovation, right? And they also help you understand so you can lead with value and share best practices, share trends, and learn the market as fast as possible. So what I did when I got to Reprise, I immediately went to my first degrees. Immediately went down a list. Anyone I knew that worked at a relevant company, anyone I knew that was in a relevant role, I'd reach out and I'd say, hey, Jeff, we're friends. I'm launching a business. Can I ask your advice? And I got on, even if you weren't my target role, I'd bounce the pitch off you. And then I'd ask for an intro to the person at your company that I would sell to. And in that round of bouncing this off of my first degree connections, I sourced a third of our revenue last year, just selling it to my friends. And then I got intros and I got referrals and I got advice on how to shorten my time to resonate, how to fix my pitch. And then phase two, I went cold outbound to who I thought were my target audience, but I didn't try to sell them. I genuinely asked for feedback and I genuinely wanted to know, is this for your role or the other department? Is this use case better or the other use case? And I'm testing, I'm refining, I'm testing, I'm iterating. And along the way, some of those meetings, they're like, hey, I don't want to give you feedback. I want to be a customer. And that's how I did the other 2/3 of our revenue. Okay. So the biggest mistake that founders make when they take a product to market is they get distracted. They got to do a board deck. They got to build a spreadsheet. They want to tinker with the website, right? They got to do everything under the sun except send cold emails. And what you need to do, if you're going to be the person responsible for launching the company, take it to market, get the revenue, if that's your responsibility, you need to make sure you have a steady flow of prospect-facing conversations to fuel the innovation of the business and to fuel the pipeline and the revenue of the business. That's the biggest mistake for founders.
Now, I think a lot of founders lead with product, right? They develop a product, they know it pretty well. They built it out of a use case just like you did. They recognize the gap. But yet, that's very prescriptive, what you've just mentioned. Four meetings a day. It's not an output for your sales. It's actually an input for your overall trajectory early on, and you're tightly integrating and fixing things along the way. Almost like an agile software methodology. It's interesting. So this podcast is really focused on a go-to-market engine, but I would be remiss if I didn't talk about operations and enablement and the impact that it's had on organizations. Tell me about your journey in understanding and partnering with someone like me on the other side of the table and how that's potentially going to be hopefully a boon for Reprise.
So, you know, it's really funny, Jeff, is when I first got to Insight Squared, I thought that I was selling a forecast. And I had grown up in manufacturing. Insight Squared was my first startup. And so in a manufacturing company, the sales leader owns the forecast. In my manufacturing company, the sales leader owned the forecast. And so I thought sales leader was my buyer at Insight Squared. And I thought I would pitch sales leader and they would pass me to sales ops. And then it would be contentious because I had learned to sell to power. And so I would try to get back to sales leader as fast as I can. And my relationship with sales ops was not great. It was contentious. They saw me as trying to outsource them, replace them with a reporting software. And they saw me as rude and condescending because I was always trained to sell above the line, sell to power. Okay. And it took me a little while to realize sales VP or CRO was passing me to sales ops because they owned the forecast and they owned the API. They own anything that connected to Salesforce.com. So even if the sales VP wanted to use my product, I had to sell to sales ops. And we shifted our mentality. It took a while. I don't learn that fast, but it's, but we figured it out and we started to champion RevOps. We started to sell to RevOps and we realized you don't want to do the forecast every week. You want to do strategic value-added initiatives. And we started to explain that to RevOps. We say, hey, we're not outsourcing you. We're freeing you. We're enabling you. Get away from being the weekly report jockey and get into the strategic conversations. Be a value add to the business. You're the brain of the business. And as we started to promote that message and take that message to market, other RevOps focused communities started to turn on and see us and say, hey, come over here. You're one of us now. And then we really learned about RevOps. And what we learned is that there has been a movement in the last 15 years, right? Every piece of product that you buy, Outreach is a great example. They ship emails for you, but they also track and they A/B test what emails work, right? You buy a telephony vendor. They also push that data. You buy Yesware, Sales, or whatever. It pushes the emails into the Salesforce, right? So every product you buy for a tech stack, it has its obvious function, what it does, but then behind the scenes, it's collecting incredible amounts of data. And the best, fastest growing companies in the world are the companies that are hiring somebody like you, Jeff, RevOps, that can harness that data and find the gaps and find ways for us to get better. So it's like a lion with a splinter in its paw. You know what I mean? I used to have a contentious relationship with RevOps. I thought they were in my way. And now I've learned that if I have a RevOps leader that I can work with and trust, their eyes and ears like I could never be, right? They have skills that I don't have and they have an ability to figure out the business and come, oh, hey, Joe, this is what's going wrong and here's what I'm finding. And so I have a partnership with RevOps in terms of the RevOps I work with at my company and in terms of my prospect company. I love meeting RevOps. I love meeting RevOps. They're the brains of the business. They understand the business better than the sales lead ever did.
That's just validation for my career choice. First of all, I'm going to have to replay the segment and just say, God damn, Joe understands.
It's like when you say something that you know will prove empathy. Are you actually empathetic?
By the way, you didn't really realize I was going to use a fishing line emoji for that question. Cool. So we have our last segment. And it's called the Rorschach test. I'm going to say a few things. Would love for you to just kind of blurt whatever comes out of whatever comes to mind. So personalization versus relevance.
We talked about this. Your website can segment me with one click, right? But a sales rep on a first call needs a 60-minute discovery call. Just go with persona, vertical, relevance, and you will land every time.
PBR.
Somebody in your job at a company like yours, persona, vertical, relevance, you'll land every time. Someone at your job, someone with your job at a company like yours has one of these three problems. Let them pick the problem and you're off and running.
All right. B2B versus B2C.
Same. Converging. We do all our shopping on our iPhone, right? Uber, Airbnb. I see the inventory and then I keep it or I delete it. Now we want enterprise SaaS vendors to behave the same way.
MQL, real or not?
Very real. Very, very real. But unfortunately, it's up to the marketing team to define what is an MQL. And so it could be more real or more fake, depending on how selfish or team-oriented your marketing leader is. And so I believe you're about to see the emergence of a PQL, which is a product qualified lead. And that is a buyer that has seen your product and still wants to talk to sales.
Deal velocity.
It's just for the thought leaders on LinkedIn, my man. I think it's your win rate, your pipeline inflow, and your sales cycle. They all combine to kind of help you both predict the short-term wins of the business, so forecast, as well as spot the long-term needs to improve. It's just those three sales metrics, you know, combined in a formula that actually doesn't work if you do any algebra. You know, I've seen it win rate times pipeline divided by sales cycle. And then what's the output or, you know, multiplied by ASP, right? What does that actually mean? Like, what's the unit if you're combining units of time, units of currency, and percentages? What is the revenue acceleration formula? You know, I don't really get it. I just think it's an ability to forecast and spot the gaps.
I can go down the rabbit hole on that as well, but let's keep going. Enterprise pricing.
I think it's changing now, and you're seeing less vendors trying to get six figures up front. And you're seeing like the snowflakes of the world kind of take over where easy onboarding, like really obvious, like I need them for this reason. And then it expands to a six-figure account after. Twilio does this. Slack does this. Even Salesforce and HubSpot are doing free trials on their website now.
The hook that comes in, the barb stick out. You can't get it out anymore. All right. SDRs and inbound.
Yeah. So I'm having a hard time with phones right now because I don't want any calls. You know, I don't have a desk phone. I don't want someone to call me on my cell phone. I hate to be, you know, depressing to any prospecting reps out there, but I think the game's changed, and I think it's about like really crafty, creative approaches, like, you know, side doors in and leading with value. But at the end of the day, I'm not really hiring the jock or like the finance major, you know, BDR anymore. I'm hiring lit majors. I'm hiring writers, and I'm hiring folks that are extroverted and creative, and I'm getting them active on LinkedIn, and I'm getting them active over email and over like LinkedIn messaging. And I'm not really having them bang the phones anymore.
Pipeline management.
Yeah, it's just about doing the like the dutiful, you know, like you make half your money in a base and the other half in a variable. So I think you kind of have to be clean with your pipeline. But one thing that I do that's a little bit interesting is, like, you know, my AEs cost me like $250,000, right? Like salary and headcount, you know, tech spend and all of that. The leads I give them, it's even more than that. And so you pay someone like $250,000 to be an on-air personality, right? To like battle over Zoom every day. And then you go and you scream at them for not doing their data entry or not sending a follow-up email. And it's like, you don't scream at a TV talk show host for not doing the interview prep notes. You supply somebody to do those prep notes for them. And so what I do, you know, to help make sure that the pipeline stays clean and the follow-up gets done is I don't hammer my AEs about that stuff. I hire support staff, and my BDRs, they're more like EA / BDR. And it's like Mad Men, you know, every AE has a partner that can support them and do some of that busy work. And my AEs, I'm building a process to help them like really quickly and efficiently get the notes to the BDR, who can then do the dutiful in the CRM. So I'm done screaming at AEs when all they really want to do is get on the phone with another prospect and battle, right? I'm not here to fight with them over the CRM and pipeline hygiene. I'm just building a system to make sure that stuff gets taken care of without relying on those humans.
And do you think, is cold calling dead?
Yes. I think that like traditional sense of cold calling, like, you know, give me your 60-40, your calls and emails every day, that's dead. Like, what are you going to call me on my cell phone, you know, during dinner? I used to watch my dad scream at people for doing that. And I shudder to think I'm sending a BDR team out there to just get screamed at over and over again. So you just got to find creative, personal ways to engage with people.
So Joe, want to thank you for joining us today. Where can our listeners find out more about you?
Oh man, it was a pleasure to be here. You can go getreprise.com. And you can find me on LinkedIn. It's Joe Caprio. And like I said, I'm kind of a nerd for this stuff. I've been working in early stage. I've gone 0 to 10 a couple of times now. And I just really, really love talking shop and talking growth and talking SaaS. So don't be a stranger. Connect with me on LinkedIn and go to getreprise.com and check out what we're doing.
Excellent. Thanks again.
Thank you, Jeff.